Hello, and welcome to this week's edition, number 1837, of the Sidvale and East Devon Talking newspaper, being recorded on Tuesday the 10th of September 2024 at the Lee Brown Room in Sidmouth. I'm Peter Eagles, your producer for this week. Your editor, Carl Taylor, is at work today. Our readers are Tony Lambert, Margaret Adams, Angela Charnock and Renee Forth. The first half of this week's news covers beer, Ottery St Mary and the county in general. Then we'll tell you about some forthcoming events for your diary. The second half has lots of news from Sidmouth, followed by news from Seaton.
Hello, Tony Lambert here. I'll start the ball rolling with some news from the Film Society milestone in beer. The Beer Film Society, the BFS, is set to celebrate its 200th film this autumn, coinciding with a new earlier start time of 7 p.m. Screenings kick off 30 minutes earlier than before, with doors opening at 6:30 p.m. The milestone film, the classic Italian film Cinema Paradiso, will be shown at Mariners Hall on September the 19th. The 1988 Oscar-winning film tells the story of a filmmaker who forms a deep bond with a cinema projectionist in his rural Sicilian hometown. The Film Society stated that it's the perfect film to celebrate such a notable milestone. As part of the autumn programme, BFS will also screen the British film The End We Start From, starring Jodie Comer, on October the 17th. Set against an environmental crisis that submerges London in floodwaters, Comer's character is a mother embarking on a quest to find her way home with her newborn. And now some football news. Beer battle for victory. Beer and Appledore have battled out some close games in the past, and this was to be no exception, writes John Davis. Beer dominated the early stages. Liam Cox and Tony Pinder looked sharp down the flanks, and Taylor Rook caused havoc as the home side's main striker. Rook was soon denied a goal-scoring opportunity when he was impeded by the Appledore goalkeeper, but the officials saw no fault in the challenge and the game went on. Minutes later, the home side got ahead when a well-flighted free kick from full-back George Harwood was headed in powerfully by Ollie Binion. The North Devon side went in search of an equaliser, and following a quick throw and an initial save by Max Haywood, an attacker followed up to score. Beer's hard work at the start of the second period was rewarded in the 59th minute when Pinder nodded across from Harwood back into the danger area and Taylor Rook netted his first goal of the season. The final half an hour was a cagey affair and Beer were indebted to Haywood in the closing stages when he got down quickly to make an important save. The Man of the Match award went to Pinder for his tireless work in midfield. Budley Salterton came on strong in the second half to finally beat lowly Plimstock United 4-0. There was no score at half-time, but Budley got well on top after the break to score through Charlie Carstairs, Oscar Walsh, Jack Hocking and Paul Barnes. There was also a good win for Ottery St Mary, who beat Beer Alston United 7-2 and are up to fifth in the table. RNLI anniversary events in full swing. At the beginning of August, the RNLI, that's the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, celebrated its 200th anniversary. The festivities continued into mid-August as the RNLI hosted a souvenir and gift stall at Picarama on August the 14th. The volunteers had an enjoyable day and were eagerly anticipating another day out on August the 21st in the company of the Rhyme Regis Water Safety Team and the F2F Team. Notably, RNLI has been named the Pico and Picorama Charity of the Year, an honour they were very grateful to receive. Towards the end of the month, the volunteers attended a series of events, beginning with the Seaton Carnival Tabletop Sale on August the 24th, the Classic Vehicle Show on August the 25th, and the Street Fair on August the 26th. As ever, the invitation extended to additional volunteers willing to lend a hand was welcomed with open arms. RNLI expressed gratitude to the Seaton Carnival for its continued support. In September, preparations were in full swing for the RNLI's participation at the Seaton Carnival procession on September the 7th. This event will be another opportunity to celebrate 200 years of the RNLI. A Meet the Crew and Recruitment Morning is also scheduled for September the 10th, starting at 10 a.m. at the Old Picture House, Harbour Road, Seaton. Prospective volunteers from Seaton, Bere, Axmouth, Musbury, Whitford, Colliton, Colliford and Branscombe will be welcome. There will be a presentation by Community Fundraising Manager Jason Luff, who also serves as a crew member on the D-Class lifeboat George Berman II. His presentation will cover key topics on RNLI activities and the Exmouth lifeboats and is expected to provide essential information about volunteering with the RNLI. The RNLI once again has been saving lives at sea since 1824. Since its launch, the charity has saved more than 146,000 lives at sea.
Hello, I'm Margaret and I'm reading you news from Ottery St Mary. Firstly, the Food and Families Festival returns. Ottery Food and Families Festival is back this month and this year celebrates its 10th anniversary. It takes place on Saturday, September the 14th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Located in a field just behind its headline sponsor, Otter Garden Centre, the festival will yet again offer a great and free day of full of food, drink, entertainment and fun. The regular festival staples of food and drink, market, street food, bar, demos, music, children's activities and well-being tent will ensure there is something for everyone to have a fantastic day. We also have an area where OSM businesses and voluntary organisations will be presenting themselves. Free programmes for the festival are available in various locations in and around the town or via their website www.otteryfood.org. The 2023 event was cancelled because of lack of funding. Festival Chair Victoria Robinson said, "Our committee of volunteers have created a truly amazing day for our 10th event. I'm so excited to share it with everyone, and it's a very sustainable one too, with every attempt possible made to make sure the impact of the event on our planet is as small as possible." Organisers are urging festival goers to catch the free shuttle bus from the town centre to the showground. Bike racks are also available for those who want to cycle. As a single-use plastic-free event, people are urged to bring reusable cups or buy tar barrels cups from the bar. Food waste bins have been donated by Suez to help with recycling and cut down on food waste. Well-behaved dogs are also welcome on leads, even on the bus, if their owners clean up after them. Organisers say, do bring your kids, granny, neighbours, because there's something for everyone and we can't wait to see you on the 14th. For up-to-date information, follow them on social media or via their website. Our second item is entitled Man Fined for Damaging a Car Window. A man from Ottery St Mary has been fined after he damaged the back window of a woman's car in the coastal hamlet of Weston. Macaulay Harris of Slade Close committed the offence on Saturday, May the 13th, 2023. Magistrates heard that he damaged the back window of a car belonging to Claire Beck while intending to destroy or damage such property, or being reckless as to whether such property would be destroyed or damaged. Contrary to the Criminal Damage Act, 1971. The 28-year-old pleaded guilty at Exeter Law Courts on Wednesday, August the 21st. Harris was fined £100 and ordered to pay £40 surcharge to fund victim services. He was ordered to pay his court bill in full by September the 11th. His guilty plea was taken into account when he was sentenced. Now we have Store Raid CCTV Plea. Police are appealing for residents to check their doorbell and CCTV footage after the Morrison's Daily store in West Hill was broken into. Thousands of pounds worth of vapes and cigarettes were taken during a break-in at Morrison's Daily stores in Ottery St Mary. The West Hill outlet in Ottery St Mary was broken into on August the 27th in the early hours of the morning, with offenders smashing the glass front door of the shop to get inside. Officers are linking the offences and appealing to witnesses or anyone with information to contact them. They are specifically calling on residents to check their CCTV and doorbell cameras for any footage which may have captured two suspects in the area. The Morrison's Daily in West Hill, Ottery St Mary, was burgled on Bank Holiday Monday between 10:50 a.m. and 1:30 a.m. A rock was thrown through the glass front door and vapes and tobacco products were taken. Anyone who can assist police is asked to report information online or telephone 101, quoting crime number 502-402-16110. Next, we have an item entitled Holmes Firm Donates to Football Pitch. An Exeter house builder has donated £1,000 to Ottery St Mary AFC. The donation from Red Row Southwest is part of their community fund initiative. The initiative aims to support the community with donations, further encouraging them to thrive. Having been established in 1911, the football club now runs four teams for adults with over 100 registered players, featuring in both its men's and ladies' divisions. Focused on nurturing young talent, the youth club supports nearly 200 children aged between 7 and 16. Its dynamic programme encourages children to stay active, make friends, and develop their sportsmanship skills from a young age. Mark Isaacs, chairman of Ottery St Mary AFC, received the donation. He said, "We're incredibly grateful to Red Row Southwest for this generous donation. The funds will make a huge difference to our team, helping us continue to provide a welcoming and fun space for all our members. Sian Smith, Sales Director at Redrow Southwest, said, "We're committed to creating thriving communities within the local area, and we are proud to support local charities and organisations with the valuable work they do."
Around the county. Firstly, speeding up delivery of net zero. Devon County Council has been awarded almost £200,000 from the government to explore new ways of reducing carbon emissions in the county. The award follows a successful bid to Southwest Net Zero Hub's Local Net Zero Capacity and Development Fund. The aim of the funding from the Department for Energy Security and Net Zero is to support local authorities in the region to increase the number, scale and quality of net zero projects in the region. The funding will be split between two projects, the decarbonisation of an industrial estate and a solar energy scheme. A total of £99,851 has been awarded to create an investable decarbonisation plan for the Heathfield industrial estate in Bovey Tracy, while £97,000 has been awarded to look into the feasibility of developing solar energy on redundant landfill sites. Councillor Todd Olive says infrastructure is key for the future. The expression, "may you live in interesting times," supposedly comes from an old Chinese curse, though no source for that has ever been found. When I first heard it, I thought it must mean, "may you never be bored." Today, though, as East Devon's portfolio holder for strategic planning, responsible for, among other things, production of the new local plan, I think of it in a different light. Regular readers of this publication will know that East Devon has several interesting and challenging decisions to take soon about where new housing development should go. Those decisions have gained added urgency with the news that the new government intends to revamp the national planning system, putting up our housing numbers by 250 a year if we don't publish a draft new local plan in the next 3 months. That would mean adding a community about half the size of Wimpole, where I live, to East Devon every year, on top of the 900 homes a year we must already deliver. If my inbox over the last week is anything to go by, deciding where to put those homes, around 20,000 over the life of the new local plan up to 2042, is not going to win any of your district councillors of any political stripe many popularity contests. An apparent failure to deliver on new infrastructure, not least to contain the sewage kindly dumped in our rivers and on our beaches by our water company, has quite rightly soured everyone's taste for new development. The purely commercially driven approach to the building of Cranbrook hasn't helped either. Listening to the new Labour Secretary of State Angela Rayner's announcement of sweeping changes to national planning policy back in August, though, you could be forgiven for thinking that infrastructure wasn't in her vocabulary, much like the previous Conservative government. Her proposed changes are heavy on house building, but light on the things that make development work. No move towards a genuinely infrastructure-led system. No new powers for your local council to hold developers to account on their promises. No sign of the revolution in local authority house building needed to deliver the government's 300,000 homes a year target, let alone the affordable homes for a rent that we so desperately need. It's a bleak picture. That's nothing new. At East Devon, we have little choice but to take that on the chin and try to do the best we can with the few tools we have. One of the ways we can do that is to try to make new development large enough that we can require developers to provide shops, schools, and GP places alongside new homes. Another is for the council to take a more active role in directing development, the opposite of the approach at Cranbrook, which has largely been led by developers. That's why we've been hard at work to produce a master plan for the proposed new town of 2,500 homes near Farringdon. It gives us the opportunity to think forwards, to make sure homes come forward alongside infrastructure, not 5 or 10 years beforehand. By incorporating that master plan into the new local plan, we can make sure landowners and developers deliver in a way that works with, not against, the public good, if government give us the right powers. An early version of the master plan will be up for public comments on September the 16th at West Point. If you can come along, please do. It's your chance to help us do it better this time around. MP's gifts and donations revealed. The gifts and donations made to Honiton and Sidmouth MP have been revealed. The figures show Richard Ford received £12,000 in donations and £325 in gifts and benefits over the last year. Donations were all made by private individuals, including Mark Peterson, who donated £5,000, Julian and Gabrielle Brooks, who donated £2,000, and Mark Brett, who donated £5,000. A meal, valued at £325, was gifted from London-based Diageo PLC. Richard Ford disclosed, "I attended a dinner hosted by Diageo for MPs to discuss challenges facing the hospitality and drinks industries." MPs are required to declare their financial interests within 28 days of the start of a new parliament. They must also disclose any gifts or benefits they receive that could be reasonably considered to influence what they say or do as MPs. Newly elected MPs must disclose any relevant financial interests from the year prior to their election. In total, 498 MPs reported donations they received. Labour MPs received the highest amount, totalling £9.3 million, followed by the Liberal Democrats with £3.2 million and the Conservatives with £1.7 million. Data for how much MPs earn from paid employment was also included in the release. The figures show Reform's Nigel Farage is the highest earning MP. He declared receiving almost £98,000 a month for presenting GB News for a reported 32 hours a week. Mr. Farage said the income was for several months of work.
And now it's Rennie Forth reading more news from around the county. Children in Poverty Report says children are being failed. Children in Poverty, a report from several charities, said children were being failed in dual crisis of poverty and mental health, adding poverty is a critical risk factor that has surged in recent years. Latest figures from the Department for Work and Pensions shows a record number of children across the UK lived in households earning less than 60% of the median income in 2022-23. Some 3,661 children in East Devon now live in relative low-income households before housing costs, equivalent to 15.2% of under-18s in the area, up from 12.7% in 2018 to 2019. The UK figure is 2.5 million children, up from 2.3 million in 2018 to 2019, before the pandemic. Meanwhile, the Office for National Statistics figures show 79,611 children in the South West lived in a long-term workless household in 2022, equivalent to 7.5% of young people. The number of children housed in temporary accommodation, such as hotels, has risen by 17% UK-wide since 2020, surpassing 150,000 and reaching the highest figure since records began in 2004. This includes 35 in East Devon. The fire and rescue workforce shrinks by 17%. The Devon and Somerset Fire and Rescue Service workforce has shrunk by nearly a fifth since 2010, new figures show. The Fire Brigades Union, which collected the data, said firefighters are being asked to do more with less. Freedom of information requests by the union show there were 1,688 people employed by the Devon and Somerset Fire and Rescue Service this year, including full-time and on-call firefighters and other supporting staff, such as call handlers. It was 370 fewer staff than the workforce of 2,058 in 2010, meaning the number of jobs fell by 17%. Devon and Somerset Fire and Rescue Service covers a large area with 284 total incidents attended in the last 7 days. As of September 5th, and 17,739 incidents in the last 365 days. The service aims to be at road traffic collisions within 15 minutes, but data for the most recent quarter, January to March 2024, showed that its performance was below target, with 72.8% of collisions being reached in 15 minutes or less. The target is 75%. The same was true for the service's call-out times to dwelling fires, which it aims to reach within 10 minutes. Between January and March 2024, 67.4% of dwelling fires were reached in 10 minutes or less. The target is 75%. Across the UK, the number of firefighters' jobs has fallen by 21% over the last 14 years, according to the data provided by 49 fire and rescue services. England was the worst impacted, with 10,000 job cuts, down 22%. In the same period, Scotland lost 1,400 firefighters, Northern Ireland lost over 200, and Wales lost 500. Matt Rack, the FBU General Secretary, said 14 years of austerity have devastated the fire and rescue service. Every region has been hit, with 12,000 firefighters lost to cuts across the UK. He added, the rise in flooding, wildfires and storms due to the climate emergency means firefighters are being asked to do more with less. He said, 999 response times are slower than ever before, putting homes and lives at risk. To protect the public, Labour must invest in the fire and rescue service as a matter of urgency. The figures also show a dozen fire and rescue services in England lost a quarter or more of their workforce. Buckinghamshire saw the biggest fall, with its fire and rescue workforce down 40% from 2010. The FBU has also found that 4,000 firefighters have both a full-time and an on-call contract, meaning that they will be counted as two firefighters in the data. A Home Office spokesperson said, throughout the country, our firefighters operate in uniquely challenging and high-risk environments, constantly going above and beyond the call of duty to protect our communities. They added, we will continue to work closely with stakeholders across the sector to ensure all services have the resources they need to protect communities at the highest standard. Fire and rescue services have received around £2.87 billion this financial year, they said. Shop prices fall in August for the first time since 2021. Prices in shops are falling for the first time in nearly 3 years, new figures show. Retailers slashing prices to get rid of summer stock helped overall shop prices fall into deflation in August for the first time since October 2021, according to an influential retail group. Deflation is when the general level of prices for goods and services decreases and happens when the inflation rate falls below 0%. Helen Dickinson, chief executive of the BRC, said it reflects retailers discounting heavily to shift their summer stock, particularly for fashion and household goods. The discounting followed a difficult summer of trading caused by poor weather and the continued cost of living crunch impacting many families, she said. Meanwhile, food prices increased by 2% in August, compared with the previous shop prices in August. In August were 0.3% lower than a year earlier. The British Retail Consortium, BRC, Nielsen IQ shop price index found, the figure is down from inflation of 0.2% in July and below the three-month average rate of 0%. The survey period covered the first week of August. The overall decline was driven by deflation of 1.5% of non-food products, which refers to products like clothing, furniture and electronics. Helen Dickinson, chief executive of the BRC, said it reflects retailers discounting heavily to shift their summer stock, particularly for fashion and household goods. This discounting followed a difficult summer of trading caused by poor weather and the continued cost of living crunch impacting many families, she said. Meanwhile, food prices increased by 2% in August compared with the previous year. Nevertheless, the rate that prices are rising continues to slow, and this month was the lowest since November 2021. Fresh food inflation slowed to 1% in August, with fruit, meat and fish seeing the biggest monthly increase since December 2020, the BBC said. Ambient food inflation, which means products that can be safely stored at room temperature, remained more stubborn at 3.4%. Retailers will continue to work hard to keep prices down, and households will be happy to see that prices of some goods have fallen into deflation, Ms. Dickinson said. The outlook for commodity prices remains uncertain due to the impact of climate change on harvests domestically and globally, as well as rising geopolitical tensions. As a result, we could see renewed inflationary pressures over the next year.
And now let's have a look at what's on in the near future. On Friday the 13th of September, Death Trap, 8 p.m, £22 a ticket. A washed-up playwright finds a chance to rise to the top again, a shot he'd be willing to kill for. This is at the Manor Pavilion Theatre, Manor Road, Sidmouth. Phone number 01395 514 413. And at the Gateway Theatre in Seaton on the same day, Friday the 13th of September, we have Henry Normal and Nigel Planer live show, brackets 12 plus. This starts at 8 p.m. and is £17 a ticket. Nigel Planer is a comedy legend, an actor, writer, and more importantly for this show, he's a great poet. So the Gateway Theatre Company is at 4 Street, Seaton, and the phone number is 01297 625 699. On Sunday the 15th, again at the Gateway Theatre Seaton, The Marriage of Figaro, a live screening at 2 p.m, £12 a ticket. Count Almaviva lives with his countess on their estate near Seville. The count has his eye on his wife's maid, Susanna, who is about to marry the count's servant, Figaro. The phone number for the theatre is the same as before, 01297 625 699.
And now some news from Sidmouth. Free blood pressure check. The NHS is encouraging people aged 40 plus in Sidmouth to check their blood pressure. It's part of a week-long national Know Your Numbers campaign beginning on Monday the 2nd of September to raise awareness of high blood pressure. Known as the silent killer, high blood pressure is a major cause of heart attack and stroke, but often has no symptoms. Knowing your blood pressure, knowing your numbers, means that you can start making healthy lifestyle changes or start taking medicines if you need them to bring your blood pressure down to a healthy level. Many local pharmacies across Devon are now offering free blood pressure checks during the awareness week at Greendale Vaccination Centre, Sidmouth Road, EX5 2JU. On Tuesday, the 3rd of September, 2:30 to 5 p.m. And at Seaton Community Hub, Methodist Church, Scarwell Lane, Seaton, EX12 2JN, Friday the 6th of September, 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. Sidmouth Community Carnival has launched a programme for perhaps the first time in its event's history. The programme, called Sidmouth Carnival Week, includes details about every event happening in the town in the build-up to the main procession, which will be held on Saturday, September the 28th from 7:30 p.m. There are also several competitions, including a prize draw and a virtual dog show. The programme is available to purchase for £1 from Sidmouth Post Office, Glidden's Cooks, Toffee Nose Sweet Shop, Sidmouth Tourist Information Centre, Woolbrook News and Wagon Bone in Sidbury. A Sidmouth Community Carnival spokesman said, "Exciting news. For the first time, to our knowledge, we have a carnival programme with details about events on in the week leading up to the carnival night. Plus, there is a £50 prize draw for Micah's Restaurant. See the back page for details. And a colouring competition to win £20 voucher and a virtual dog show, as well as lots of classes to enter." Town Council seat up for grabs. Sidmouth Town Councillor Phil Weaver has resigned, meaning a casual vacancy role has opened up at the council to fill his place. Town Clerk Christopher Holland announced that a casual vacancy now exists for a town councillor in the West Ward. A spokesman for the town council said, "Under the local election rules, any 10 electors for town ward may request a poll to fill the vacancy by contacting the returning officer at East Devon District Council. The period during which any 10 electors can give notice requiring an election to fill the vacancy will expire after 14 days. If no poll is claimed, STC will proceed to fill the vacancy by co-option, for which further details will follow." Musicians, tune up for a new concert season. Sidmouth Music announced their new season with a series of concerts and a display in the Town Library until 14th of September. The concerts are held in the Parish Church, which has excellent acoustics, a central position and nearby parking. which all go to make it an ideal venue for them to play. Opening the season on the 12th of October is British pianist Philip Leslie, laureate of high-profile competitions and renowned for performances of culture and refinement. He will play works by John Ireland, Sergei Rachmaninoff, William Baines, and finish on Mussorgsky's magnificent set Pictures at an Exhibition. November brings two concerts, cello and piano duo Maxim Kalver and Kumi Matsuo, playing Beethoven, Brahms, Debussy and Mendelssohn, and the Halden String Quartet with Schubert, Caroline Shaw, Korngold, and a delight to finish of traditional Danish folk music transcribed by the Danish String Quartet. In the new year, January's concert will feature the Litterina Chamber Ensemble, a Baroque string and wind group exploring the art of the trio Sonata from Corelli, Handel, Purcell and Telemann, as well as J.S. Bach. In a special collaboration established in 2016 with the Leeds International Piano Competition, the series also includes a concert from a prize winner fresh from the triennial Leeds competition. The 2024 finals take place later this month, and only then will the decision be made as to who should come to Sidmouth in February 2025. Closing the season in March will be Hungarian violinist Bulgarka Gyorgy and pianist Amy Butler in a programme of Ravel, Prokofiev and Frolov. The series is organised by Sidmouth Concert Society, conceived in 1972, and now in its 53rd year is presenting high-quality classical music in the town. Today, its top-flight artists are internationally acclaimed, players and the best up-and-coming award winners, the potential stars of tomorrow, forming a season of varied formats, styles and composers. Sidmouth hit the goal trail again, and their unbeaten league opening to the season has taken them up into second place in the table, writes John Davis. It took them only 3 minutes to get in front, Liam Carey slipping through Corey Rogers who kept his composure before rounding the goalkeeper to score. Elliot Driver's long ball then found Ryan Gilpin, who scored with a well-judged lob before the visitors pulled a goal back. It was 4-1 by the break, though after Nathan Cooper got Sidmouth's third goal and then Louis Jagger-Kane curled in an effort that the visiting goalkeeper misjudged. Just past the hour, Gilpin netted his second goal of the game after good work by Louis Spalding, and 4 minutes later from time, Carey made it 6-1 to Sidmouth from a penalty spot after he had been brought down in the box.
It's Margaret again, and I'm reading some local Sidmouth sports reports. The first one about golf. Golf club beats promotion rivals. Sidmouth Golf Club clinched a significant 4-1 win over promotion rivals Yelverton in the Dartmoor League. This victory keeps Sidmouth side by side with Dainton Park in joint second place, setting the stage for a fiery encounter when the two teams meet next Sunday. Both clubs view this match as vital in their fight for promotion. A notable mention from the weekend's match goes to Brian Davies, Sidmouth club manager. Davies' remarkable birdie from 12 feet at the 18th hole handed him and team captain Jim Anderton a winning edge, a one-hole victory. In addition to this, the exceptional performance of Aaron Taylor and Ben Hodgson couldn't go unnoticed. The duo, who remained undefeated this season in the Dartmoor League, both home and away, have collectively added 7 points from a possible 8. The excellent golf has greatly contributed to Sidmouth's standing. Away from the league action, Sidmouth member Archie Griffiths thoroughly enjoyed his participation in the Nick Faldo Features Junior Golf Finals at the Belfry. Although he didn't win, he finished a noteworthy 8th position on 8 over par at the PGA course. In further news, the Sidmouth Jewellers Friday Stapleford competition showed quick greens that day. Howard Cushing emerged victorious, posting the highest and winning score of 33, narrowly beating Bob Andrews and David FitzHenry on counterback. The Chairman's Day pairs competition on Saturday saw Len Wright and Mike Davies winning on counterback after they, along with Mike Knight and Ronnie Moore, scored 45 points. G. Orton and M. Travers took third with 44. In the Sidmouth Seniors home match against Fingal Glen on July the 29th, David Hall and Alan Goodson began strongly, quickly going 2 up. However, Fingal Glen soon caught up and took the game 4-3. Still, Sidmouth came out victorious with a 5-1. Fingal also won their home game 5-1, leading to an overall draw. A crucial lesson learned leading into the next matches. The next report is about rugby. Rugby club victory over the Army under-23s. Sidmouth Rugby Club defeated the Army under-23s in their final warm-up game before the league season starts, writes Terry O'Brien. The hard-fought match showed Sidmouth's strong defence and competitive spirit as they beat the Army 19-14. The game started with the Army applying significant pressure, but Sidmouth held its ground, breaking out to score first. Jake Smith was the breakthrough player, scoring the first try, and he added the conversion from wide out. Sidmouth took control midway through the half when they turned over possession just inside the Army's half. Finn Lashbrook, fullback, pulled a rapid move to the wing and outpaced to score in the corner. His try remained unconverted, and after the break, the situation was a repeat. The Army regained position and tried to penetrate the Sidmouth defence, but to no avail. Sidmouth's Sam Heathcote had a promising run, but a knock-on brought the move to an end. At the half-time whistle, the score was 12-0 in favour of Sidmouth. Early in the second half, Sidmouth surged ahead as Connor Preston touched down under the posts after a fortunate bounce from a charged down kick, with Jake Smith adding the conversion. As Sidmouth fielded several changes, the Army tries to score 2 tries, both converted, though Sidmouth held on for the win. For the final 20 minutes, Sidmouth and the Army seemed evenly matched, but Sidmouth held on and triumphed. Sidmouth now prepares for their opening league game against Exmouth, kicking off at 3 p.m. this Saturday. The Quins and the Colts also have their game set against North Taunton and Ivybridge Colts respectively, both scheduled to be played at Sidford. This is about the running club back in action at Sidmouth. Members of the Sidmouth Running Club, the SRC, bid farewell to the summer holidays by donning their mighty green tops at various events last weekend. First, run leader Derek Blackburn celebrated Bushy Park's 1,000th park run. Derek was one of the estimated 5,800 to 6,200 park runners at the event. Despite the waiting times, Derek maintains he wouldn't have traded the experience for anything. Derek said that he waited longer in the finish tunnel than it took him to complete the actual run, but he wouldn't have missed it for the world. SRC run leaders Jasmine Salter and Richard King enjoyed the London Marathon event, the Big Half. Jasmine finished in 1 hour 55 minutes, with Richard and daughter Georgia finishing in 2 hours and 4 minutes. Five more Mighty Greens participated in the Lions Woodbury 10K event at Woodbury Common. Among the pack was Scott Chown, Christine Farnham, Karen Farnham, Sarah Clapham, and Alice Gill. Scott, who volunteered at Cranbrook Park run a day before, finished first in 1 hour, 7 minutes and 59 seconds. Sarah, who also ran, completed her run in 1 hour, 14 minutes and 5 seconds. Christine finished in 1 hour, 9 minutes and 52 seconds. Karen in 1 hour, 10 minutes and 46 seconds. And Alice in 1 hour, 41 minutes and 57 seconds, having taken a detour at the 5 mile mark, but managed to get back on track. Off the track, SRC members didn't sit idle. The summer had been a busy period for the committee and organisers of the much-awaited X to Axe race. The 22-mile adventure and charity marathon are now open for entries. Engaging in activities outside running, the Mighty Green Dragon Boat Racing Team has been actively fundraising for Devon Air Ambulance. Team Captain Bob Huntington completed a marathon in 3 hours, 48 minutes and 34 seconds on the Concept 2 Row Erg at Sidmouth Seafront during the Folk Week. The team, which is more than halfway through its fundraising goal, is prepping for its singular training session ahead of the end of month competition. Meanwhile, Chairman Terry Bewes urges SRC members to ready their torches and high-vis gear as the off-road club runs come to an end. The group is set to return to St John's School on September the 11th, the same day junior sessions commence.
More news from Sidmouth. Nail-biting bowls final. In a thrilling display of skill at the Sidmouth bowls final... And more news from Sidmouth. Nail-biting bowls final. In a thrilling display of skill at the Sidmouth bowls finals, Jane Painter and Jill Bishop put on a nail-biting performance for spectators. The matches, held on a sunny day, were packed with suspense and competition. The Women's Championship was a highly contested affair between Jill and Jane, with both demonstrating exceptional skills. Their competitiveness was evident throughout the match, as neither managed to secure a significant lead. The game went beyond the usual 20 or 21 ends, with both players tied at 13 all after 20 ends. By the 28th end, the score was 19. However, in a dramatic turn of events, Jill Bishop scored two shots in the 30th end, securing a hard-fought victory with a final score of 21-19. The men's championship saw Barry Kirwan and Alan Brown face off. At first, Barry trailed Alan, but caught up to make the score closer at 19-17. After a compelling struggle, Alan managed to score in the succeeding two ends, resulting in his triumphant win of 21-17. The Open Championship featured Dane Painter once again, this time paired against Andrew Lowe. Jane led for the first 12 ends, but Andrew soon closed the gap. After a tense 22 ends, the scores stood equally at 19 all. However, Jane wasn't ready to suffer defeat. She strategically placed two bowls close to the jack, winning her the game 21-19. In the men's handicap, Ken Wheeler and David Timms faced each other in a tight game. Despite having to concede a 10-shot start to David, Ken managed to catch up and even led by the 14th end. However, David's three near-perfect bowls sealed his victory. Alongside these competitions, other winners were announced. In the women's categories, Sue Turner, Chris Radburn, Sue Clint, Karen Hollingdale and Jill Bishop won various titles. The men's categories saw Alan Brown, Paul Stanton, Les Crump, Vincent Ferranti, David Fishlock, Barry Kirwan and Mike Borst claim their wins. Several mixed titles were awarded recognising teams like Sue Turner and Brian Smith, Julie Wevel and John Mason, Steve Boyle, Keith Pollitt, Sue Turner, Carol Williams, Patrick Collins, Debbie Leeds and David Timms. The three-day event was smoothly coordinated thanks to the collective efforts of Northcote's David and Brenda, the competition secretary, Gordon Brown, the umpire, the Marcus Stewards cake makers and bar staff. The heartening performances by the finalists not only amused the spectators, but also ignited an aura of high-spirited competition that peppered the event with undeniable excitement. Terence Rattigan's longest-running West End play, While the Sun Shines, has been revived as part of the Summer Play Festival at the Manor Pavilion. The classic wartime comedy play was first produced on the West End stage in 1943 and was later made into a film. The setting of the play is the Albany and Piccadilly on the eve of the wedding of the young Earl of Harpenden. He is serving as an ordinary seaman preparing to wed his longtime fiancée. Hilarious complications ensue when two suitors, one American and one French, turn up, along with a former girlfriend and a Harpenden's father. Directed by Jack McCann, making his debut at the festival, the production welcomes back several younger actors who have featured in previous seasons. Laura Mead, who will be playing Mabel, was last seen at the Manor Pavilion in 2023's Aitkbourne trilogy, Damsels in Distress, and has recently been playing Betty in Some Mothers Do Have 'Em in Cirencester. She said, "The character of Mabel is a complete change in energy from Betty Spencer. I'm excited to be in one of Rattigan's classics." Gwydion Evans, who is playing the American Mulvaney, was last in Sidmouth in Sailor Beware. He said, "I am thrilled to be back in Sidmouth after missing last year due to a six-month stint in the Mousetrap." Both plays present their own challenges of endurance for the actor in equal measure. Full details can be found on the Manor Pavilion website.
Hello, and now it's Rennie again with some items regarding Seaton. BioBlitz at the Wetlands. A BioBlitz event will be held at Seaton Wetlands. The event, organised by the East Devon District Council, EDDC, Countryside Team, and the Axvale and District Conservation Society, AV and DCS, is aimed at nature lovers of all ages. It will involve recording all species found in the wetlands in one day. The event will run on Sunday, September the 15th, from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. with various surveying activities including bug hunting, pond dipping, bird watching and flower surveying. There will also be a special evening bat walk at 7:30 p.m. Countryside team leader James Chubb said, "We are thrilled to partner with the AV and DCS to host a BioBlitz at Seaton Wetlands. The drop-in format makes it easy for people to spend as much time as they like exploring the wetlands, whether it's for an hour or the entire day. Our team and volunteers will be available to help participants make the most of this experience. A full schedule of programmed activities will be available on the Wild East Devon website, including a moth trapping talk at 10 a.m, guided flower walks at 12 p.m. and 2 p.m, and the pre-bookable bat walk at 7:30 p.m. Visitors can also borrow equipment for pond dipping, bug hunting and stream dipping, as well as binoculars for bird watching at the island hide. The Discovery Hut will be open throughout the day, serving scones from Paul's Bakery in Seaton for a suggested donation of £3.50. The donation will support Seaton Wetlands conservation efforts. Most activities will end at 4 p.m. with a discussion at the Discovery Hut, where a countryside ranger will share the day's discoveries. The event will officially close with the bat walk. Recent bat species recorded at Seaton Wetlands include common pipistrelle, greater and lesser horseshoe, and Dobenton's bats. Councillor Jeff Jung, portfolio holder for Coast Country and Environment, said, "Seaton Wetlands is managed by East Devon District Council's own countryside team to provide a haven for wildlife. The BioBlitz offers a fantastic opportunity to explore and record the rich variety of species found here. This family-friendly event encourages residents of all ages to come and discover the incredible diversity of nature found right on their doorstep. As an added incentive, Seaton Tramway is offering a special Wetlands Experience ticket for the day. Adults can travel from Seaton to the wetlands and back for just £5, and children under 16 can travel for free." Noisy kids banned from playing ball. Seaton resident Jodie Potter was left confused after East Devon District Council banned children from playing ball games at Seafield Gardens. EDDC have installed signs in parts of Seafield Gardens in Seaton that bans children from playing ball games there. EDDC admitted to Ms. Potter that the signs had been installed after complaints that the children were noisy and could damage the grass. She said, "I also pointed out that there is crazy golf and tennis being played in Seafield Gardens, both of which are ball games." They then admitted that someone had been pestering them to put the signs up as the children were noisy and could damage the grass. She said that EDDC have suddenly designated an area that has been used by children for decades as no ball games area. "Children have been playing on this grass in Seafield Gardens in Seaton for decades. I myself played there in the 80s and 90s. In July, she noticed three signs installed that read, "No ball games." She called the council twice to ask why this has happened without any public consultation. She said, "The man at EDDC I spoke to said someone had complained about some young children playing cricket on the grass. He believed there was a bylaw stating no ball games allowed at Seafield Gardens. However, when I asked him which bylaw, he couldn't tell me." Miss Potter went on to say that this is the only bit of grass some children in flats or shared housing have to play on. In response to Jodie Potter's claims, a spokesman from East Devon District Council confirmed that officers had responded to complaints that had been received and are continuing to monitor the situation in Seafield Gardens. "We will liaise with and update residents as appropriate." Tributes paid to Seaton legend. Ted Gosling, the curator of Seaton Museum and the only person ever to be made a Freeman of Seaton, has died, aged 95. Ted was a part of Seaton life for over 80 years and had a unique memory of its history from the 1930s onwards, which he was passionate about sharing. Over more than half a century, he collected materials about the history of the town, and his collection became the nucleus of the Seaton Museum, which he founded over 30 years ago, and which is located on the top floor of Seaton Town Hall. He remained curator until his death. Prior to the foundation of Seaton Museum, Ted had been in business in Seaton and was curator of Lyme Regis Museum. At Seaton Museum and in the Axvilly Heritage Association, which he established to run and support it, Ted gathered around him a dedicated team of volunteers and organised regular trips to places of interest around the county and beyond. Ted had an encyclopedic memory, an enthusiasm for knowledge, and a capacity for writing, which led him to produce numerous books on the history of Seaton, Colliton, Axmouth, and more widely, East Devon and the county at large. Most notably, The Book of Seaton. He researched the early history of the town in the Roman and medieval eras and in its Victorian heyday after the coming of the railway in 1868. He also filled most of the pages of the newsletter which he edited for the museum and sent regularly to its supporters. In his 90s, he founded the Seaton Memories Facebook group, which now has 3,500 members. Ted was a witness to the transformation of Seaton, whose population trebled during his lifetime. He lived through and documented its role in the Second World War, when US troops were based in the town in the preparations for D-Day, the rise and fall of the holiday camp, the closure of the railway, and the building of Seaton Hospital. Ted was aware of how valuable history could be in the present. In 2017, when Seaton Hospital beds were threatened with closure, he gave me a copy of Mary Wood's pamphlet on the history of the hospital, published by Seaton League of Friends in 1991. He told me that the times when the town really came together were in 1940, when we were threatened with invasion, and in the 1980s, when we raised the funds for the hospital. Without that pamphlet, I would not have known that Seaton raised 100% of the funds for the wing of the hospital, and was threatened in 2023. Ted was greatly loved by many in Seaton, and will be sorely missed. He is survived by his wife, Carol. A book of condolences is open for signature in Seaton Library. The museum's assistant curator, Laura Hewitt, is currently the acting curator, and its trustees, of whom I am one, are meeting this week to plan its future, about which announcements will be made in due course.
Thank you, Renee. And that's the week's roundup. Many thanks to today's readers. We also thank the editors of the newspapers from which we have taken today's articles. The Midweek Herald, the Ottery and the Sidmouth Herald, and the Express and Echo. We have abbreviated some articles to cover as many as possible. We also thank the Royal Mail for free delivery. Today, sunrise is at 6:30 and sunset is 7:30-ish. Please return your pouch and memory stick so we can continue sending you the talking newspaper. There is a website where these recordings can be heard using a computer, tablet or mobile phone. The website's address is www.eastdevontalkingnewspaper.com. If you are intending to listen to the website, Wendy would like to know. This team expects to be back with you on the 29th of October. And so until then, it's goodbye from all of us.